Peace of My Mind, a project that uses storytelling and art to rediscover what connects us. I'm John Noltner, the founder and director of A Piece of My Mind, and I have the good luck to travel the country and the world interviewing people to help reveal the beauty and wisdom that's all around us, if we choose to see it. For this season, we traveled to Northern Ireland, one of the world's most resilient landscapes, shaped by decades of sectarian conflict known simply as the Troubles. The violence officially ended with the signing of the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, but now, almost 30 years later, tensions remain and there's still healing work to be done. But this isn't a history lesson. It's a look forward. In these conversations, we sit down with artists, educators, peace builders, and everyday people who are leaning into creative solutions to heal old wounds and imagine a different future. They're transforming former flashpoints into gathering places, using poetry and mural making to foster dialogue, and finding surprising ways to rebuild trust in places where division once felt permanent. Their stories remind us that healing isn't quick and reconciliation isn't easy, but both are possible when people choose courage over fear, curiosity over judgment, and empathy over old narratives. So join us as we explore Northern Ireland's ongoing journey toward peace and meet the remarkable individuals who are crafting new pathways through creativity, dignity, and hope. Welcome to A Piece of My Mind's new season, The Troubles, Finding a Path Toward Healing in Northern Ireland. I'm glad you're here. Do me a favor and just introduce yourself. Tell us your name and where we're sitting today.
I'm Hilary Laurie, and we're up at the Black Mountain Shared Space.
And if I didn't know anything about you, which is pretty much true, what would you like me to know?
Just basically a basic background on how far I personally think I've came in a year.
Because it's been about a year that you've been coming to this place?
Yep. As soon as it opened, I had to toy with the idea of getting myself back out there from being isolated from basically most things that people would take for granted because it occurred for my husband. And when he died, I found things very difficult. We were married for 46 years. And I found getting myself back out there was very difficult, that when this centre opened, it was opened for both sides of the community, which as in Protestants, Catholics. I was 12 when the Troubles broke out. So all my life I have lived through the Troubles. I don't think I was ever traumatised by it because my mother and father kept us all as close-knit. We didn't really discuss religion, as in who was right or who was wrong. Everybody's entitled to tell their opinion, but my mother and father kept us together as a family, as secure. We got through it. And basically, when I look at the younger generation now, and they can go wherever they like, which is great. When I was growing up, I couldn't go into the town for to go to dances, pubs, anything like that, because of the Troubles. So you were kept basically in your own area, which meant then the girl next door would have married the boy round the corner because you didn't get out for to meet different kind of people, different religions or anything like that. And I'm so happy that my grandchildren can go wherever they like, with whoever they like, which is a great achievement.
And so where did you meet your husband? Were you the girl next door and he was the guy in the corner?
No, my husband, I met my husband here. He was on the army.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you cared for him for
15 years.
15 years.
15 years.
And so that sort of became your world.
We both worked out. And the first home that we were in, there was a scheme came out then that you could buy your home, well, off the housing authorities. So we decided that we would buy this, our three-bedroom semi, which we got all those years ago, for £13,000. So we had been there for 42 years in the one where I used to live. I used to live round my daughters. The wall was at the top of the street, which was a divide. And we had wire grills on our windows so that if anybody was out ranting or whatever, it was like one side against the other. And when they came down, our windows got it. So I reared my daughters through that, as well as being reared through that myself. And I can honestly say we were never, never brought up with any bitterness, just the apprehension of not knowing somebody from the other side. It was the same in work. I had friends from the other side, and that was as far as it went. You went to work with these people who you classified as family because you spent a lot of time with them. But once you came in from work, that was it.
You weren't ever going to go meet them for dinner?
No, but you couldn't have. Because apprehension and fear of somebody seeing you with somebody that they think you shouldn't be with. And that's from both sides had the same story. As in, we were never involved in paramilitaries. None of my family have been ever involved in paramilitaries. That was my father's greatest fear of one or two of his sons being brought in to a situation that they wouldn't have had any control over once they were in. And thankfully, none of my two brothers did. So then I think, well, we were all brought up as, what does the word normal really mean? You just got on with it and you toughened up. And, you know, I just think that in this day and age, people, when we were growing up, we could have made jokes and said things that didn't really mean anything. But I find now that the generation now finds a lot of things too quick to think they're offensive. And that's just my opinion. I have said things jokingly, as I thought that my granddaughters would tell me off that you shouldn't be saying that. And I go, why? Because if you've something to say, just say it. I thought that's what a freedom of speech meant, without causing a great offence. You're not saying things to offend anybody. You're not being in their face. But just for talk's sake, even colour, if I say, I don't know why you can't say black or whatever, why? I mean, somebody asked me what colour I was, I'd say white. Am I not allowed to say I'm white?
Yeah.
I just don't get where all these things come from. I think we were brought up tough love, and not everything in life is going to go your way. there has to be give and take. And you also have to have a backbone. You know, there's no point in crying about, oh, such and such a one called me this and called me that. So what? Just get on with it.
You said a thing a little while back that I was curious about. You were saying you couldn't go to dinner with a person. You had your own concerns mm-hmm. and apprehensions about it, but also mm-hmm. it sounded like you said there were pressures from the community that would look at you and say, no, you shouldn't be talking to that person. Was there that sort of outside pressure on you too?
You felt because you lived in one community and they lived in another. And the dogs on the street knew who was this, who was that. And they were also in the same boat. So you wouldn't let word out if you had have invited someone to your home. Vice versa. They wouldn't have been telling anybody that I was a Protestant. Or I wouldn't have been telling anybody that they were a Catholic.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because then you just didn't know. It was just a thing that everybody knew. Each side kept to their own side. And if you did meet up with each other, it was done secretly that you wouldn't have let your neighbour know where you had been. And it's vice versa.
So you lived through the troubles. You were mostly staying in your community
mm-hmm.
with the exception of some work where you mm-hmm. met people. Then you were caring for your husband for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, you said you needed to get back into the world.
I needed for, I think, my own sanity. For the start, I'm 68 now. So, as the saying goes, one foot in the grave. You know, I'm not going to get any younger. You're only going to be coming older. And I thought, right, well, whatever I have left in my life, whatever length of time that may be, I need to get myself out here. And I need to start being me again. As in, I classify myself as a sociable person. I enjoy a good laugh. But I was apprehensive of coming up here because it was both sides. So it took me a few months to get my head round till I plucked the courage up and I decided, do you know what? I'm going. And if anybody says anything to me, well, I'll answer back.
Hmm.
And from I have came up here, I've had a different change of life, as in I really enjoy coming here. I have met loads of friends from both sides of the community who are just like me. And nobody would ever want to go back down that road again. Certainly, I for one wouldn't want that. The future is for my grandchildren and they are living a life that we couldn't do. And I'm delighted that, you know, there's schools that can go together. You know, growing up, like you just went, we went to a Protestant school and they went to a Catholic school. But you didn't do integration.
Mm-hmm.
Even amongst your education, it wasn't integrated. And I hear my grandchildren coming out with boys and girls Catholic names. And I know by their names that they're Catholics. And that's a strange thing too, because you do know by names. And I think, isn't that fantastic that they can actually, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have went and said to my best friend, oh, guess what? I've met a fella and you call him Liam. No, that was...
Because that's a Catholic name.
Yeah, that was never going to happen. Never.
And so when you came to Black Mountain Shared Space, the first day, did you come by yourself?
The first day I came, I spoke it over with my daughters and they were delighted that I was prepared to get myself back out there. Lewis had came and spoke to me quite a few times and tried to encourage me for to come up, but I was very apprehensive of going into the unknown from my perspective. And I was worrying about, what if somebody says something? I know I'm the first for a joke and a laugh, but where does this word offence, where does this come into this? Because people could say, but I wouldn't offend me. I would laugh with them. And I felt very apprehensive of coming up here. So I came up, I put myself out there, and the Stanton joke is now I've almost moved in here permanently because I'm here 4 days a week. And it's such a turnaround in my life that I never would have thought would have ever have happened.
And so if you had a friend who'd never been here and you wanted to encourage them to give it a try, what would you say to them?
I'd say, come, you need that push, get yourself out there. And it's made such a difference to my life. Such a difference coming from isolation, from losing my husband of 46 years to going through that first year without him, learning to live a different way to live. He couldn't hold a conversation with me, but he was there. And going from that till really having, I mean, my daughters are very, very good. I see them every day, but they still have their own lives to live and their children and their homes and their holidays. So you sort of don't want to end up like the spare part, as in, well, we can't go here because we're believing my mommy out. So you need that you need to be saying to yourself, for whatever length of time, and there's nobody knows how long they have, there's only one person can call your name and that's it. That's my belief. And if your time's up, your time's up. Age doesn't come into it. But you need to push yourself, and it's absolutely more than welcoming up here. You can talk to anybody on religion, anything. And I really, really enjoy it.
What surprised you about that process? As you started opening up to it, as you started meeting new people, what surprised you?
The surprise was it came across as most people were just like me. They were just here to get themselves out. They were here to meet new friends. Some of them already knew each other, and that's fine. But the fact that you now know them and they know you, and you can just get on with that and look forward till coming up and I'll see you tomorrow. And, you know, I go home from here happy that I feel fulfilled, that I've put a good morning in. And then once you get in and you are on your own, and the loneliness is the worst thing ever, ever. You get till the stage where you get maybe till about 8, 9 o'clock at night and you're just clock watching. Is this it? Is this life for me now? So if I didn't have up here to come to, I don't know where I would have ended up, probably in deep depression. So mentally, this has helped me 100%. But you need to push. You know, as the saying goes, there's no point in lying down. You're not going to die. So you need to go. And you talk yourself through it. And when I came up here at first, Lewis was amazed when he seen me coming through that door, because he did spend a lot of time trying to talk me around. But because of the different religions that are coming, and you feel, unless you have lived that life, nobody would really understand this divide. And although they say, I mean, I have been over into Ballymurphy. I have walked it from where I live. And I have been over there. I've been to a wee centre there and really made feel welcome. And it doesn't bother me. I can actually say to people now where I'm going. And I don't care whether you get diehards on both sides. You will still get diehards. And it doesn't bother me now, because I just say it. And tough.
What do you think it was? You said Lewis was working on you for a while to get you to come in the doors. What do you think it was that finally flipped, that got you?
Just going over things in my mind and thinking, am I going, I've came through worse things than this in life. And am I just going to let this wee thought stop me from going somewhere? Because I am a strong person. And I just thought, no, I am going to give it a try. Because you don't know till you try. You know, and once I came up here, and I'm a talker, and I talk and I talk and I talk to different people, and I have a laugh, I have a joke, we have a carry on, we do our crafts. You're never stuck. If you don't think that something's right, you can say to the next person, could you show me that? And they will show you that without a problem. Nothing is a problem. You make your own problems in your own thoughts worse than what they are. And it was just getting all these wee things put together in my mind. That if I go here and I don't like it, I'll walk away. But the very first day I came in here, well, the feeling to me was, this is home. From the very first moment I walked through these doors, without even meeting anybody new for the very first time, I just felt so calm.
I'm glad you took the chance.
Oh, very glad. Very, very glad.
We've got some other smart folks in the room here, and right? I'm curious if they have any questions that are coming to mind.
I'm curious about what you still see lingering from the conflict. Is it art? Is it the murals? Are there still biases and divides? Is it the peace walls? What is the work that's still left to be done?
There's a lot of work still left to be done, which is getting there. I think the younger generation can still be influenced by so-called, well, to tell you there is no paramilitaries, but the dogs in the street know there is, right? So that influence, especially when you're living in an area that, well, on both sides, they would still hold control. If you're living in that area, it's still under control. That if wee Jimmy wasn't towing the lane, or wee Jimmy was out giving somebody a bad time, they'll come to your door. So that they've never... when you live in our communities, It's still there. It's still there. It's not as focal or not as shown to be seen, but it's still there. And that needs to be, nobody should still be living a life in this day and age in a community that still has control on one side and the other, and they do. And you've got to keep pumping your my grandchildren. One in particular could be very, very easily led astray. And you're telling them, no, you can't go there, or no, you're not going to such and such, because mommies and daddies know who the company are. And the last thing you want to do is to get wee Jimmy roped into anything. So you do still live like that. You do. You know, it's the same, what they call nowadays, culture days. It doesn't bother me. You know, when I was a young girl, we always had St. Patrick's Day off school. So on St. Patrick's Day then, even though I'm a Protestant, but we did wear green. Now, I don't know why this was all. You know, my belief is, I'm a Protestant and I live in Northern Ireland. A lot of people call it Ireland. I call it Northern Ireland because I've never lived anywhere else, only in Northern Ireland. I have never been living in Ireland all those hundreds and hundreds of years ago when there was famine and things. And, you know, why do people want to keep going back? You know, no matter what country in the world I go to, I respect the flag of that country. My father brought us up as in Rome, you do as the Romans do. Now, when I'm on holidays in Spain, that doesn't cause me offence whatsoever. That's their flag, and I will respect them. When it comes to here, the tricolour is not my flag. It is not the flag of Northern Ireland. And that I would have an opinion on. You know, if you want to respect that flag, well, you can respect it, but it doesn't mean to say that I can't respect my flag of the country that I grew up in, which is Northern Ireland. I don't understand a dual passport either. We must be the only country in the world you can have two passports. One's Irish and one's British. Why? What is that all about? You're either one or the other. And if you're the other, well then, why are you living then in a foreign country if you prefer to be the other? I mean, if I chose to go and live in Spain, France, anywhere in Europe, well, I would have to become a European to get a European passport. So I don't get why you can pick and choose. And it's always been a case of, do you know what it is? Because everybody knows they're there. They're still there. And this is all this politics. Nobody makes money out of this, only a politician. Nobody. We all sit with the same amount of money. We all still sit in the same areas that we grew up in. So nobody got rich out of the troubles, only politicians. They were the only people who got rich.
I'm curious, as you talk about the flags and the passports, when you come into a place like this, mm-hmm. where there's likely to be people who share a really different opinion, how do you navigate that so that you can still, you know, spend time side by side?
Because I am what I am, and they are what they are.
And if they make room for you, you can make room for them?
Exactly. I'm not causing anybody any offense if I say I have a British passport. Because that's what I am. I classify myself as a British citizen. Because I've never known any different. I know a load of people who get an Irish passport simply just because they own apartments in Spain. So they can still be classified as a European, but they still have a British passport too. So how can that be? How can you identify yourself as one or the other? You're either one or the other. You can't be both. But obviously, money weighs. It suits. And that's what the majority of it's for. Yeah. You know, I know men who are in the Orange Order, staunch Orange men. But they've Irish passports because they have apartments in Spain. So who's winning and who's not? It's not about, you can be whoever you want to be, as long as you're happy. And as I say, I find the use offence too quickly. You know, why is everybody all of a sudden being offended? Surely you're not going to go home and sit and cry because that person didn't like your religion. You know, move on. Just take it in the backbone. Fair enough, if that's your opinion of me, so be it. And that's how you get through.
You mentioned earlier that you had to just sit and think about, you know, coming here for a few months. What helped you to make that decision to step in the door? You talked about it a little bit, but was it mostly to sit with yourself, or was it influence from other people, from Lewis, from your children?
From Lewis speaking to me and asking me to give this a try. Quite a few times. And Lewis never ever thought I was going to do this. He didn't, like, you know. And neither did my daughters. But I knew I was going to have to do something for my own sanity. I needed to get myself out. And I needed to be in company. Now, whether or not it was a mixed company or whatever, if I hadn't came up here, then there's other centres locally. But they wouldn't have Catholics in it. You know, and I thought, no, I am going to. So I talked to myself every day, and I would have said things like, I'm going to go up there tomorrow. And then the next day came, no, I'll not go up today, I'll maybe go up tomorrow. And I literally, with the help of Lewis, big influence, Lewis made a dramatic change in my life without realising he'd done it, just by talking to me and telling me the opportunities of what I would gain up here. And he was 100% right. And my daughters are actually delighted that they no longer are on a guilt trip, that they're leaving mommy out of things, that they have to call every day because most days I'm up here now. So they're actually having to ring me to say, are you going to be in? Which for 15 years, they wouldn't have asked me that because I was always in because I had their father to say to. So big, big difference for me, getting myself back out there and that push, just keep going. And I am here 4 days a week. That's a standing joke. You'll need to bring your bed up. And I love it. And I love the company. And I've had great fun. And I love it. It's just like life back in me again. When I thought life for me had gone, I have got life back in me now. So I know I can move on. I actually went on my first ever at 68 years of age, girly holiday with Sharon, who's down there, and two of her friends, two women I had never met in my life before. And I had an absolute ball the whole week we were away. So that has given me even more confidence for to get out there and meet other people through their friends, you know, and spend a week with someone who you'd never met in your life, two other women, and I feel now as if I've known them half my life. So yes, it has helped me a great deal. It gave me back life.
I'm glad Lewis kept bothering you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm glad you found the courage to come mm-hmm. in the door and find that new mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. Thanks for talking with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Hey, Razak here. Before we let you go, we'd like to share one more interview with Mark Vinton, a founding member of the Black Mountain Shared Space in Belfast. Mark grew up in Belfast around interface areas, where he witnessed and participated in outbreaks of violence between nationalists and unionists when he was only 9 years old. Now, Mark is a single father of two daughters and is trying to cultivate a peaceful future in which his kids don't need to make the same sacrifices he did. Please enjoy John's conversation with Mark Vinton.
Thanks for taking the time to do this.
No problem.
Do me a favor and just start out by telling us your name and where in the world we're sitting today.
My name is Mark Vinton, and we're sitting in Belfast as president and team.
And if I didn't know anything about you, Mark, what do you suppose I should know?
I'm a single father to two daughters.
How old are they?
One is 34 and the other one is 26.
Yeah, I got a 30-year-old and a 27-year-old. So right. Same,
well, you know,
same world. Yep. Help me understand this place that we're sitting in, Black Mountain Shared Space. Tell me what you know about that.
Well, I would be a founder member, along with Seamus. This place came out of conflict, a comparative conflict in the local area. And we got together probably 16, 17 years ago to see what we could do to try and cut out the conflict and the interface violence that was going on at the time.
Yeah, tell me about what was going on at the time.
Well, going on at the time is no different up here from what it was when I was a kid. I'm born and bred in the area, and I still live in the area. And that's what my time would have been took up with interface violence. So from a young age, from probably the age of 9 or 10, I would have been involved in interface violence up here, and that just carried on generations after generations.
Yeah, so I hear that phrase a lot, interface violence. So are we talking about the areas where Protestant and Catholic communities come together?
Yes, that's an interface right along with a million brick wall, as it would be an interface as you're coming up this mountain road and go further on up. There would be a big steel fence that goes along, and it's sort of an interface is built to keep two communities apart.
And when you were 10, 12 years old, what did that look like, that interface violence?
That interface violence would have included anything from stones, battles, and then progressing to petrol bombs, and then progressing to the Han fighting.
10 or 12 seems to be pretty young to be doing that.
It was just, this is where I came from, and that's what happened in this area at that time. So I was just one of many who took part in it.
And what did, as you got older, what did that look like in your life?
Well, it then moved on, and I would have took an interest in loyalist paramilitaries at the time, and I would have done anything to oppose the Republican movement.
So as I'm trying to understand sort of the history of this place, I mean, the United States has our own trouble.
Yep.
And when I look at what's going on you know, I'm on one side and I look at the other side and I pretty much think that everything I do is about right and everything they do is about wrong. And it's hard to see the other part of that. I mean, does that sound familiar?
Yes, very familiar. And to add to that, growing up as a young boy from this area, I never got to see anybody or meet anybody from the other community. So that then polarized them even further because I didn't hear their side of the story. The only time I heard about them was would have been on TV, on the news, whenever there was an atrocity or they tried to murder somebody. So that's the only narrative I would have known from the other community.
And so when was the first time when you actually met someone from the other side?
Roughly 2007.
2007. How old were you at that point?
Born in 73.
Yeah, you do the math. I'm not good at math.
38.
What brought you together? What was that chance?
There was a community organization formed called the Belfast Conflict Resolution Consortium, and it was made up of members and associates from Loyalist paramilitaries and Republican paramilitaries, and they were sort of brought together to try and bring an end to interface violence, and that's when I met Seamus.
Why did you want to do that?
Because growing up, I've seen all the troubles. I've lost a whole lot of friends and I've been involved in different atrocities. The Shankill bombing, I was there the day of the Shankill bombing. I've lost friends to Republican, and I just thought it was time that I never wanted my kids to revisit or have to make some of the decisions I had to make as a young little boy.
But it must have been hard.
It was. It was very hard.
Talk about that first meeting with Seamus.
Awkward. Not knowing what to say. Not knowing who was meeting. Just a strange outer body experience, probably for me. Knowing that Seamus had a background within the Republican movement and just not too sure of where that would go.
But you still trusted it was worth doing?
But I still trusted it was worth doing. I would have been an advocate for the peace process. I would have went around different communities all across the country running up to the Good Friday Agreement. I would have been in the Progressive Unionist Party, which would be aligned to the Ulster Volunteer Force and the Red Hand Commandos. And I would have been around different parts of the country advocating that we all give peace a chance for the Good Friday Agreement to sign up to the Good Friday Agreement.
And when that finally was signed, when it finally came into reality, what needed to happen after that for that peace and that truce to hold in the communities?
I think it's all about trust. So it is. It's all about trusting that the other side had put down their arms, that the other side had came to an agreement that there'd be no more violence, like we'd seen before. And everything in my life has been built around trust. So it was about trusting, first of all, about trusting in the process, and then about trusting in the people that worked out in the process.
Yeah, so this really interests me because it happens all the time. There'll be a ceasefire or there'll be a truce in some place, and then one person does something that's an infraction and the other side reacts. And how do you, I don't know if I'm going to ask this question well, but how do you know that that's just one person and it's not that whole other side that's break? You know, how do you trust that process?
Well, there was an incident that took place down in Mazarine when three British soldiers were killed by dissident Republicans. And that was sort of the point where we seen that the Republican movement, as the mainstream Republican movement, were coming away from that sort of hymn when they came out and opposed it and openly said on the news that they were sorry for the deaths of the three British soldiers and stuff like that. So it's actions more than words.
Okay, so something happened, but then the leadership from the Republican side sort of took responsibility and said, no, we really wish that hadn't happened.
That's correct.
Yeah. And those are small steps toward that trust.
Yep, that would never have happened before.
Yeah, okay.
So it wouldn't.
What allowed you to build some trust with Seamus and build a relationship there?
It was just me and him would have then been key area contacts for this area. So if there had been people from his community trying to come to this community and start trouble, I would have phoned Seamus. And it was Seamus's response and again Seamus's actions on the ground that told me that he was in it for the same reasons as myself.
Those have to be some pretty tense moments sometimes. If you feel trouble coming to the community and you're standing in front of it saying no?
Yep.
Tell me about one.
Well, again, it's about believing in the process. It's about trying to get a different generation to think different and to act different. So by trying to stop violence, you were also letting your own community see that you were willing to stand up against violence. So you were and willing to do something so that didn't happen.
What else do I need to understand about a place that's been through stuff like this?
Suppose everything in Northern Ireland is sectarianized. When Protestants all go to the same, all go to state schools, right? And all state schools would be single identity. Well, up until not so long ago, there was a couple of educated, mixed educated colleges now. But when I was growing up, I went to school with all Protestants. I run about with all Protestants. The bus routes and the taxis that I would have used would have been all Protestants. So it was a polarized community. So it was.
And how does it feel these days?
It feels a lot different. So it does. It feels a lot different because there's not bombs going off in the street. There's not people dying. The news is completely different now. And I feel that this place is a lot safer for my daughters and for my grandchildren to grow up.
Hmm. When you all started Black Mountain Shared Space, did you get any pushback?
Yes, there's always pushback when change. So when you want to join up community working as in the two sides coming together to join up in any sort of thing, there's always the people in the background who will try and stop it from happening for their own reasons. Not everybody goes through the same process, and not everybody would think that giving peace a chance was worthwhile. Some people would say, well, I think we should go back to the old ways were better. So it's about being able to stand up to them people and face them down and challenge them.
And I think, if I understand it right, there were some accommodations made. This is on a site of an old factory, which sort of served as a peace wall separating Protestant and Catholic. That was taken down. This building was built and opened just last year.
Yep.
Right. But if you look at it, there's a parking lot on one side for the Catholic community and a parking lot on the other side for the Protestant without an actual through street. And what was that, an accommodation that could let people live with this?
Yes, that shows both communities that it's their building, because some people may be scared to come up this way to that front gate. When this was a factory, there was always two Andersons, one for the Protestants and one for the Catholics.
Mm.
So sort of way that, but the workforce was always mixed. So sort of way that was a replication of that system. So people walking up to the building still to this day might feel that their security is okay to walk through Spring Martin and walk up the mountain road and come in that direction. And people from the Protestant community might not feel safe to have to walk down that. So it's about opening the access where people feel safe to come to the building. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of way. And then you need to take the residents into consideration that they didn't want a free road because they didn't want extra traffic. If you have a look at the streets down below, the streets are very narrow, so they didn't want all the build-up of traffic too. So it's accommodating local residents.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me about some of the stuff that you've seen happen at Black Mountain that gives you hope.
Well, one of the biggest things is that both local primary schools use this building and use it separately, and they come with another primary school from a Catholic religion. And my wee grandson being able to mix freely with kids from the other community is the biggest hope you could get.
Hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. What have you learned in this process of doing this work?
I've learned that there's more that joins us than there is separates us. No, I mean, we both have the same disadvantages coming from working class communities, health, education, the welfare of people, and just local amenities are the exact same on both sides. Where growing up, you would have been told that one side gets the other, one side gets more than the other, but you find out in later life that isn't true, that both sides still have the same problems.
Both sides would get the message that the other side had it better?
Yep, all the time. Mm. All the time. And when you live in that bubble, then you don't know any difference.
Yeah, if you never meet somebody from the other side, how would you ever know?
Yep.
I'm looking at the other smart people in the room. Kate, you got any questions brewing?
I'm curious about all the public murals in Belfast and what those commemorations mean to you. If they bring up difficult memories walking past them every day, or are there particular ones that are really special?
Yes, there is a couple on the Shankill that are really, really special to me, because I've had friends that were killed that are on the murals, and we all reserve the right to remember what happened in the past. You don't have to glorify it by remembering it, but if you forget what happened in the past, you're more likely to repeat it. So the murals, no matter what part of the community they're on, I respect all the murals for that kind of remembrance.
When there's that sort of loss, when there's that sort of violence in the past, how do you let go of that? If you're in this shared space with people who were on the other side of that conflict, how do you let go of that so that you can move past it?
Suppose it's just about not forgetting it, but about just putting it to the back of your head and moving on. No, it's about maturity. So it is. It's all sides done bad things, but it didn't make them all bad people. I mean, some people made bad choices, but they weren't all bad people.
And if I'm hearing you right, the goal of making sure that your kids and grandkids don't have to go through that thing, that's bigger.
That's bigger than anything.
Than holding on to that other
stuff. That supersedes anything.
Caitlin?
I was hoping, you mentioned that you're a single father, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about what it means to you to be able to be that figure, and also to show your children and your grandchildren that this is the work you're doing to create peace in your community.
Yep. Unfortunately, my wife committed suicide when my two daughters were very young. One was only 10 years of age and the other was only 3 years of age. So I took on that responsibility with help from my parents to raise my kids. And I would say in that lies the want of me, the drive of me, to do even better, to make sure, even double my efforts, to make sure that my kids don't have to make the choices that I would have had to make as a young person, and also that they can freely mix with other people. My oldest wee girl went to college on the White Rock Road, and the first day in college, when they asked them where did they come from and all that kind of, she said Spring Martin. A couple of people said, where's that? She was the only Protestant in the place. But she still felt safe and ended up meeting lifelong friends who were Catholics. So that's where I see, where before I probably would have one on one shouting at the news, and you don't realise that your language in the house has a knock on effect on your kids. So all what I was saying, I didn't realise was having a knock on effect on my two kids. So it's about repaying them. That this place to be better and to grow up in a better community. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry for your wife.
No, okay. Perfect.
Can you tell me a time when it was hard doing this work?
Oh.
Or don't we have that much time?
I can tell you more times than all. Sometimes it was very hard, especially being a single parent. Sometimes I had to get my wee girl up out of bed and put her in the back of the car till I went to an incident. I mean, we might have been in bed at 9, 10 o'clock at night, and something might have kicked off somewhere, and I had to go to that incident. So I had to get my wee girl up out of bed and take her with me to meet the police or to meet Seamus or to meet somebody to try and get a resolution to the problem. So that would have been hard. And then facing down people within your own community. I've had people I've fell out with. I've had people that don't speak to me. I've had people who were friends and who would have then seen the work that I was doing and was going, oh, he's too close to him, or he's this or he's that. But you just have got to rise above it. If you believe in what you're doing, you just got to rise above it.
So tell me a time when you knew you were doing the right thing.
Suppose that day when we girl came home from college and told me, suppose we're going to the college in the first place. Lem said to myself that what I am doing is having a knock-on effect. So the negative stuff that I was doing and the negative stuff that I was saying in the house had a knock-on effect. And then I seen the positive stuff that I was doing and the positive things that she was hearing from me in the house also had that knock-on effect, only in a better way.
Yeah, if you had about two more days a week in your life, what would you do with it?
Relax. Chill out.
Not much time for that?
No, there's not. In this game, there's not much time for that because your door, once you become a representative of your community, your door is always open for anybody to come and they don't know two people spend before them 5 minutes ago. So sometimes you don't get much time in this work. But it's worth it.
Yeah. Last question, maybe. What advice would you give to somebody who's never been in this space, who maybe hasn't experienced cross-community conversations? What would you say to them to get them in the door?
What I say to everybody, when I was out selling this building, I would have been one of the ones who held community meetings in the run-up to this building being open, the run-up to a plan for the money to get it. And to me, it's the same thing about the Good Friday Agreement. Give it a chance. See if you don't like it, don't come back. But at least come up and see. Don't be relying on what other people are telling you or what maybe your baggage from the past, maybe still holding on to you. Just come up and give it a chance. And if you don't like it, you don't have to come back. But at least give something a chance. You can't say you don't like something if you've never done it. So you can't. So that's what I do say to people out in the street. Just come up and if it's impressive and you want to come back, come back. But if you don't like it or you don't feel secure in it, then don't come back.
Yeah, that sounds like an okay place to end. Thank you, Mark.
No problem.
Thanks for tuning in to The Troubles, Finding a Path Toward Healing in Northern Ireland, a series produced by A Piece of My Mind. I'm John Noltner, the founder and director of A Piece of My Mind. Be sure to visit our website, listed in the episode notes, to see photos and video from these stories. This series is produced with editing help from summer interns Kate West, Sawyer Garrison, and Caitlin Emai, and audio production by Rosic Seifelot.